The Behind the Bets podcast with Doug Kazarian is presented by DraftKings. Download the app for free today.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you. This is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. Sports is back, sort of. We have a UFC card this weekend, a lot of moving parts over the last month or so, as many of you paid attention, but we are having it in Jacksonville, UFC 249. Khabib Nurmagomedov is not on the card. He is isolated in Russia, but the show must go on, as they say. But we're talking football on this coming podcast because we hope to have the NFL season in the fall. We're talking props. Preston Johnson, Mike Clay, our numbers gurus. You've heard them on the pod before. We're going to give out our favorite props on the coming season. Caesar just put out a bunch. You may have read some on ESPN.com. We did some daily wager segments as well, but we're going to talk it in great detail coming up here on the pod. Christina, how are you holding up during this pandemic?
I'm holding up. I think we can say that at least.
It's all you can hope for. And, look, I'm in good health and I don't have a family to worry about. I'm not unemployed. So I'm not going to complain. We are certainly inconvenienced. Everyone's inconvenienced, but there are some serious issues out there right now. So hopefully this podcast will provide a little entertainment, a little distraction, all things considered. And I'm not going on much sleep here, Christina. About an hour and change last night. A lot of Russian ping pong overnight. The time difference. I'm on Russian time. When we're not doing any content for Daily Wager, I'm on Russian time. So I've been a big fan of the table tennis. Let's leave it at that. Have you got into that at all?
I have not, but I've been, trying to find some sort of sporting event to watch, something to watch. You know, The Last Dance has been great. But we need something. I need something to just throw on and put on in the background to keep myself entertained.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I did a story for ESPN.com on like kind of what's left to bet on. And Nick Bogdanovich and William Hill called it the star of the show is ping pong. And I get it. Because the matches are like 15 minutes to 20 minutes, sometimes 10 if they're a sweep. And they play like 8 games a day, I swear. They're all over the place, and there's only like a 5 to 6 hour break. So you just got action all day. It's quick hitters, and if you kind of watch it like I do and get into it, you can definitely make some money. So we'll do more ping pong later. But first, I want to tell you about DraftKings giving new users a free shot at over $100,000. Download the DraftKings app and enter code Doug. That's D-O-U-G at sign up. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com. for details.
Stop. Have a time.
Time now to welcome in two gentlemen who have joined me often here on the podcast and also on Daily Wager. But we're breaking ground. We're doing a three-man weave, although that's a basketball term, and going a little football. Preston Johnson, Mike Clay. Guys, thanks for taking the time. I know it's unique times, but Caesars posted some player props for the coming year, and we did some stuff and some content for Daily Wager's digital platform, but I thought it'd be fun to do this week's podcast along these lines. Preston, I know you've gotten involved in a handful. How many player props have you already wagered on?
I only wagered on one. It's my favorite one just because the line was so ludicrously low, in my opinion. So I only bet on one of them. There's still so much going on with NFL that I haven't fired a ton, and there's still some uncertainty of whether or not we even get a 16-game season, which would deem these no action. But there was one where I just couldn't leave it off the table that I did bet.
All right, well, let's start where we kind of started our coverage for Daily Wager with the quarterback position. Tom Brady, obviously, big news making the departure of New England after two decades there with Bill Belichick, now in Tampa Bay. And Mike, I'll start with you because I kind of lean to the over here. Well, first of all, the number opened 4,399.5. So we're just going to say 4,400, but it's always like a half point off. So 4,400 yards here. It's moved down to 4,100 yards. I lean the over just because of all the weapons, but I understand Winston is much better than people are giving him credit for because of all the interceptions. He's getting a lot of negative pub. But you like what Brady's going to do here in Tampa.
Yeah, I do. I thought the original line was fine as is. I probably would have leaned a little bit on the under, but my projection is 44-17. So it is pretty close to that original line, and it's well above the current line. And look, I mean, Brady has thrown for at least 4,100 yards in 7 of his past 8 full seasons. He actually just missed last season. Think about that. We talk about that being maybe the worst season of his career. We talk about how poor his weapons were, and he was just short of this line. Now he goes to Tampa Bay, where you're with Bruce Arians. I mean, 7 of his past 8 offenses adjusted for game script have been pass first. Last season, they were top 6 in plays per game and in terms of pass rate. So he's going to throw it a lot. And, you know, again, as you mentioned, we talked about this on Daily Wager, but his weapons all aligned for him to push it downfield or produce a lot of yardage. Mike Evans, top 10 in average depth of target, 5 of his 6 seasons. Chris Godwin, 4th best after the catch last season. Rob Gronkowski has been number 1 in ADOT each of his past 3 seasons. O.J. Howard has never not been in the top 3, and even Tyler Johnson was super efficient last season in his last season in college. He could be their number 3. So I think it all sets up for him to push it down the field more and to produce a ton of yardage. And guys, even if he misses a game or so, I still think he can get to this number.
Okay, so you're giving yourself a game handicap there. Preston, I have a feeling we're going to have a situation a lot this coming football season where, like, it's going to be one of those kind of pros versus Joe situation. The sharps are all going to be fading the Bucks. The public's going to be on them. And I think the sharps are going to lose some money here. I do think Brady is much more capable than he showed last year, given the receivers and how limited everything was. I think it's going to be a pretty productive season, all things considered. So I lean over. Where do you stand?
So I would have bet under, I think, at 4,400. I think it's really fair now. When you break down the numbers, you know, if he plays 16 games now, we're assuming he plays 16 at 4,400 yards, he needs to throw for 275 per game. He hasn't done that since 2017 anyway. I thought that was a little bit extreme, especially with the added equity that he might not even play a full season. Now that it's come down nearly 300 yards or, you know, right about 300, 256 per game, that seems right on line with me. But I keep getting stuck on the fact that, and this goes now to your point about everyone trying to bet against the Buccaneers that pretends or is sharp, and then everyone else that's a Joe or whatever is just going to be betting on the Buccaneers and Tom Brady. I'm not sure that he plays enough games, not only because, say, they have a playoff position locked up week 17, he misses that game, or maybe he tweaks something, misses a game or two. I'm just not convinced the Buccaneers are going to be in the playoff scenario in like week 14, week 15. He might miss the last couple of games anyways, and if that's the case, they're going to preserve him for the following season. They want one more great, you know, Brady quarterback season for that next year. I'm just torn when it's all said and done because the number has moved down 300 yards, but I still think I would bet under if I had.
Interesting. Actually, and while we're on the topic, my favorite bet with the Bucks is the yes to make the playoffs, not necessarily the win total over, but minus -155, -160 neighborhood, because I do think, remember, extra wild card team this year. So 3 non-division winners in each conference will make the postseason for the first time in NFL history. It is just a fascinating topic. On top of that, we have, so he's a 3-time former MVP, reigning MVP, Lamar Jackson. Outstanding season a year ago, over 1,200 yards rushing. This number's also come down. It sounds like all 3 of us are on the under. Mike, or I guess Preston, you know, why did you, even with the adjustment down, why were you still under? And what is it, 940 for rushing yards?
Yeah, 935 and a half range. Maybe okay. It's 940 now. And now it opened right at 1,000, 999 and a half. And I mean, when you look at just Lamar's prop lines last year, and we all talked about it on Daily Wager. We probably did a few podcasts. His rushing total was like 600 yards. His passing was 2,300. I absolutely loved the passing last year. We were all super bullish on Lamar Jackson. The problem is, like, that was last year. That's the time to buy on Lamar Jackson was a year ago. Now he's the reigning MVP. You're paying a premium now, in my opinion, to bet overs on Lamar Jackson. At the current numbers, I think they're priced more or less correctly if he plays 15 to 16 games again. Last year, he only played 15 because they didn't need him in that final game of the season. They already had the playoff position locked up. So for me, it's okay. Is he an injury-prone player? Maybe not. He's actually been healthy in the NFL so far. He was pretty healthy in college, but the way he plays certainly seems susceptible to an injury. And the Super Bowl team, they're going to be wanting to be 100% in the playoffs. And I just think any tweak, ankle, whatever it might be, they're going to let Lamar Jackson rest 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it may need be, so that they're 100% in the playoffs, because this is a team that's going to contend. And so for me, I would still bet under just because I think it's more likely he doesn't play 15 or 16 games, you know, versus actually getting there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and that's where I lean, Mike, in terms of logic. Now, to me, he's so dynamic, so special. I mean, it's something we really have never seen. So I'm a pass on that. And I know you have historical context on this, and I'm just curious, before you even give me your answer, I'm going to ask you a pushback. Like, how much can we really use past quarterbacks when we're talking about a guy as distinct and unique as Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, it's tough because he is in a class of his own. You're absolutely, he's kind of broken the historical context for this kind of thing. But at the same time, if you look at, if you use context and you look at the last six guys who have had 800 plus rushing yards, all of them saw a pretty substantial dip the next season they played extended snaps. So, you know, they might not have been quite as high as Jackson, but the numbers still plummeted for, you know, guys like a Michael Vick, for example. And, but the key here really for me is that they plan on changing the offense a little bit, right? An exact quote from him last month is, I don't think I'll be running a lot, right? He expects them to kind of give the ball to J.K. Dobbins, Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards more often. And, you know, I thought this was really interesting. Last season, only 41 of his 176 carries were scrambles. So that's a lot of designed and called runs for him that perhaps will go away this season if they run it more often. And then, of course, Preston, you were talking about injuries. You know, we definitely have to factor in the possibility of missed action, whether it's rest or whether it's injury. You know, last year, the projected full-time starting quarterback averaged just over 13 games played. A lot of that was due to injury. You know, that's a variable we definitely have to weigh against all of these guys, as you know.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, you obviously don't want to root for injury. No one does. But it is a large component of this contact sport that is football. And when you play that position and everyone's trying to get their licks, but it is, for me, I couldn't pull the trigger, but I certainly understand where you guys are coming from on all this. Now, Preston, you're one bet. We teased it, you know, normal producers would push it to the end of the show, but I think we've made our audience wait long enough. It is a quarterback focused prop. So why don't you just tell the people what you bet?
So what I bet's a lot different than the current market. So that's right. Going to change to some degree. I would still bet over, though, and I'll get into why. But it's Teddy Bridgewater over 2,999.5 passing yards. It was just way too low. It's come up 500 yards. Even when we were recorded the Daily Wager segment 2 days ago, I believe it was, that number I think was more like 3,300. So it's moved up even since then. But the ultimate reason is I'm bullish on the Panthers offense as a whole. I love what Mark Rhule did, whether it be Baylor or Temple. He's been just fantastic in college football. But you know, just from last year, how much I love Joe Brady. And we talked about it pre-LSU. And then we saw what he did. He makes Joe Burrow the Heisman. They go undefeated. They win the national championship. They snatched him from the New Orleans Saints the year prior. He's now the offensive coordinator here with Rhule at Carolina. And, you know, he's creative. He's innovative. And they're going to have all this athleticism. I think they have five guys. Let me read through them real quick. I think DJ Moore, Anderson, Samuel, Roberts, McCaffrey, that have a 4.3 or 4.4 speed. And when you look at defenses and what they're going to try to do typically, when you have five guys on the field with that kind of speed, you say, okay, we're going to go five or six defensive backs, and we're going to try to keep up. Well, when you do that, that's fine. Where the Panthers have this huge advantage then is that Christian McCaffrey is really good at running the football through the tackle still. He's a great running back too. So you can't go five, six DBs. You have to play linebackers on defense so that you can limit McCaffrey's ability running the football. And when you do that, then Joe Brady is going to recognize the mismatches he has, the edges he has with all his speed guys on linebackers just because he's that good at what he does scheming. And then you look at Teddy Bridgewater himself. Last year, he was one of three NFL quarterbacks that ranked top five in adjusted completion rate from a clean pocket as well as under pressure. Whether you're throwing guys at him or not, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in football. Now, he doesn't have a huge arm. He doesn't have a great deep ball, but that doesn't matter the way Joe Brady is going to scheme this with all the speed guys and playmakers they have around him. I just think their offense is going to be able to score and move the ball. And then compounded with that is the fact that their defense projects to be one of the worst in the NFL. They're going to be down in a lot of games in the fourth quarter, eating up garbage yards, especially through the air. This number at 3,000 was just remarkably low. And still at 3,500 range, it's will Teddy Bridgewater throw for 220 yards per game through the air? If he plays 16, that number I'm very confident in. If he plays 13 games, I still think it's, you know, it's like a 250-yard per game, achievement that he needs to get to at that, you know, missed two or three games setting. So for me, it's an over either way, but it is getting close to the where the number is just kind of a pass. I would say I'd bet it up to, I had a number here, just 1 second. I can pull it up. 3,700 is my like true projection. And so if you can get, I think, up to 3,600, I would then pass at that point.
You know, it's interesting because we've seen him in the recent years as a backup and obviously the injury, and like he was once obviously a starter, went to the playoffs. It's fascinating because it's such a simple kind of concept you throw out there, like X, Y, and Z. And it's like, I mean, look, we saw a backup quarterback do well in Carolina offense last year, for all things considered. I can't fault you at all with any of your rationale. I'm on the other side of a new quarterback in town, so to speak. I'm going to Indy with Philip Rivers. I think at 4,000, this number seems pretty high for a team that prides itself on its offensive line, prides itself on running the ball, and traded up, albeit a few spots, but traded up to get Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin. And yes, they have T.Y. Hilton, who is kind of a playmaker at the wide receiver position down the field, but he's never healthy for an entire season. And I just think at the core, even though they play indoors and that's going to help some of the passing yards in the winter, like I just feel like it's still a team that's going to want to win games 20-14. And this is an important thing, Preston, you can speak to this. You can't be afraid to lose a bet, right? Like, obviously there's going to be a case you can make for the other side, and you can make one for any bet. But in general, I just think this is like kind of silly number. Am I wrong here? Am I crazy?
I think the number's pretty fair, and I'm more or less, relative to the market, at least right now, bullish on the Colts. I think their win total was only 8.5. I think it should be 9. But as a whole, and Philip Rivers, and this is what's, I know it's kind of an annoying replication over and over, but you have to handicap this when you're doing player props for season long stuff. Like Philip Rivers, if he tweaks anything, they need him in the playoffs. They'll make sure he's healthy. He'll sit out a game, two, three games, whatever it may be. So that's another thing that, yeah, you're probably right in the sense that if we go with that 13 games average per season last year for quarterback, you know, then this number is a little bit too high. In general, I think the Colts are going to be very good. I love what Frank Reich does. I love that they have the connection prior. You mentioned that. I'm passing. I wouldn't bet this. I think the number is fairly close to fair. Mike might have his projection in front of him, too. He could tell you where he has his. But I think Rivers is a pass just altogether.
Yeah, I do. I'm at 38-21. So I'm with you guys. I like the under here. And it feels a little bold, right? Because he's thrown for 4,000 plus yards every year over the past decade, except for one, which is all the way back in 2012. But again, this is not the same situation, right? The Colts defense, I think, is very good. They want to run the football, one of the run heaviest teams in the league last season, as you pointed out. So I'm with you. I think the Colts, I have them in the 3 seed right now in the AFC. I think they're set up to be a very good team, but again, they want to run the ball, and that's going to take the ball out of Rivers' hands in the fourth quarter, because they're going to win. And because they plan on handing the ball to Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack. So I'm with you guys. I like the under.
So both you guys are bullish on at least the Colts in terms of performance by the entire team. I'm just trying to pump the brakes a little bit on the Colts, because I still think the Texans are in the mix there. I don't know. Maybe I do think it's an upgrade with Jacoby Brissett to Philip Rivers, but how much of one at this age for Rivers remains to be seen. Mike, you had a best bet involving another quarterback as well. What was it?
Mine was Kyler Murray. So I'm going to go under on his passing yards. The line is essentially 3,900 right now. So again, the points I kind of laid out were, if he hits that mark, if he gets the 3,900 yards, that'll be the 11th most all-time by a second-year quarterback who was drafted. And only two of the previous 10 had more than 75 carries during that season. And that's really the key part of this, because he runs the ball a lot. He had 93 carries last season, and there's really no sign of that slowing down, right? He's a great athlete. He's going to use his legs. And since 2009, there have been 35 instances in which a quarterback carried the ball more than 75 times in a season. 35 instances. Only four of those guys got the 3,900 passing yards. So, look, maybe Murray is a superstar. Maybe he can get this done. He's the next Deshaun Watson. Who knows? Maybe he is that legit star player. But are you going to bet on that? I don't think so. I think it's super risky. So even at 95% of the projected snaps in that offense, he comes in at 37-57 for me. That's over 100 yards below this line. I feel a lot more comfortable going under.
Okay, and another guy you're going under with is Baker Mayfield. I believe it was Booger McFarland's basically said, like, it's put up or shut up season for Mayfield in Cleveland. I'm not ready to go there just yet, because it's year one of the new coaching staff, but you figure he has to be better. You figure the coaching offense, just all things considered, the schematically, just the internal sort of chemistry has to be better. But, you know, 4,000 is still a lot of passing yards.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, he was at 38-27 last season, so it might be easy to say, well, they should be more efficient this season so he can get to 4,000. But it's not really that simple. Last season, he got to that 38-27 mark, playing just under 99% handling just under 99% of the dropbacks for that Browns team. That's a hard number to get to. In fact, only 13 quarterbacks got over 95% last season, and it was a pretty healthy year for quarterbacks. So that's okay. You can't just bank on that number from last year going up. That's tough to play that much. You know, on top of that, he was 10th in pass attempts last season. He averaged 7.2 yards per attempt, which is around average. You know, it felt like a disappointing year, but he still averaged in yards per pass attempt. Still came short of this line. And now he goes to Kevin Stefanski, who operated the second run heaviest offense in the NFL last season in Minnesota. Now, maybe that won't translate, but it's something that we have to consider for sure. Kirk Cousins last year was 24th in pass attempts and barely clicked 3,600 yards. So again, a lot more comfortable leaning under here.
How much I want to get Preston's take, but first of all, how much stock you mentioned, again, that was a different system. And remember, Mike Zimmer was adamant about changing the makeup of the team to become more run focused. I think that was 1.5 seasons ago. So when you talk about Stefanski and all that, how much is that just kind of that he wasn't ultimately the guy in charge and it was just sort of the vibe that was for that particular team?
I definitely think it's something to consider. And I don't have the Browns as a super run heavy team. I have them more balanced. I went conservative on this. But that being said, I do think the Browns are at worst an average team. So I don't think they're going to be, you know, playing from way behind in the fourth quarter a lot. You know, the defense is okay. They have some young players ready to take a step forward. They improved a tackle. You know, I think they're going to be competent. So I don't expect them to be in that kind of rough situation. And not to mention that, you know, Stefanski is kind of applying some things he did in Minnesota, right? Like signing Austin Hooper to an expensive deal, drafting another tight end, picking up the option on Njoku. You know, it signs point to them at least being a balanced team. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Preston, look, much like Mitchell Trubisky last summer was sort of the MVP hot ticket, there was a lot of Kool-Aid being drunk with the Browns. It's interesting. Mayfield kind of brings it on himself to a certain extent. But where do you stand with this Mayfield prop and also just the Browns' upcoming season?
This is it's fascinating to me because from a betting perspective, we generally want to bet against the hype, right? And last year, the Browns were the team that were hyped probably more than any other. And, you know, you wait. And then right before the season starts, you start betting Browns not to make the playoffs at plus money. You start betting their season win total unders to take advantage. And what's great about teams that completely and vastly underachieve that season that they're extremely overhyped is the following year, everyone seems to forget about them. I'm not sure I have it in me yet to buy in the Browns. I think Stefanski's going to be an upgrade in that regard offensively. I loved what he's been doing, what we did in Minnesota last year. I think one of the things going directly to this in the run game point that we were talking about is like Nick Chubb. I think one of the things the last 2 years, more so 2 years ago, but they, like, why don't they run more with Nick Chubb? He's averaging over 5 yards per carry.
Right.
And they would try to throw too often with Mayfield, and whether or not he, you know, runs the second most frequent like they did last year in Minnesota or not, I think he's going to give Nick Chubb the ball as often as they need to. Take a little bit of the pressure off of Mayfield. And I'm secretly thinking the Browns will be better than people expect just because last year they underachieved so drastically. And I'm not sure they're necessarily going to be making the playoffs though anyways. But they're a team I'm keeping my eye out on, whether it be preseason season win total or just week to week, at least early in the season, they might be a good ATS team.
Yeah, and I know Odell Beckham Jr. is Odell Beckham Jr. and some craziness around that and some hoopla, but if he had these injuries like he alleges that he did, I mean, he should have a bounce back here, and obviously that would help Mayfield. Let's round out our quarterback discussion with one more for you, Preston. That's Jimmy G.
Sure, I'm stealing this one from our friend Joe Fortenbaugh. I know we talked about this with him a couple of days ago, and it's interesting. I don't love betting overs on these season-long props unless it's just ridiculously low, like I mentioned with Teddy Bridgewater. This one's in a similar vein, but Jimmy G isn't a quarterback known to be very healthy outside of last season. But last season, he did play all 16 games. But he made some great points. He talked about Jimmy G's total being, 229 yards lower than he threw for last year. And last year was his first season coming off of an ACL injury, his first season in a new system with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco with all of these new weapons. And last year, he pointed this out. I thought it was great, too, that the first half of the season, as he was kind of gearing up and getting used to everything in this new system, he only threw for 221 yards per game that first half. The back half, he threw for 271 yards per game. And at the current number, I mean, he'd only need to get, I think, to the 220s, 230 range for this if he played 16 games to go over. They added Brandon Ayuk, receiver, in the first round. And then he made a great point, too. I forgot about Jalen Hurd from Baylor. I loved him at Baylor. He didn't play at all last season. He was a third-round draft pick, I think, last year for him, pretty early in the third round, you know, top 70 pick. He's going to be an addition as far as their receiving weapons go. And so for me, just with everything kind of gearing up for year two, Jimmy G, more healthy, another year in Shanahan's system. And you saw just how much he improved that back half of last year. Not to mention, you know, they just blew it in the Super Bowl. I know a lot of people, the narrative is the team that loses in the Super Bowl always takes a step back, and they never, you know, I trust this 49ers and Shanahan scheme and Garoppolo to have another great year. And so I would bet over on Jimmy G. I think that's the direction to go with his passing year.
Well, I mean, that's the question, right? Because he didn't just lose the Super Bowl. Then he thought he was the reason the Niners lost the Super Bowl. And that comes with the territory of the position. I get it. But the Super Bowl hangover thing in terms of the losing team in the Super Bowl is real. Now, it's mostly about like going back deep the next year deep into the playoffs. I think them to make the playoffs, what was it, like 330 or so, minus 330? That just seems so enticing. Kittle was so banged up for so much of the middle part of the season last year.
Was too.
I know. When they
five starters out for a month. Yeah.
Yeah. At full strength, they were crushing people. And we saw that in the postseason. Now they caught some teams like the Vikings on a short week and at home. I get it, but they're a pretty dominant team. So, but that could hurt Jimmy G if they're running the ball a bunch the second half, much like they did against the Packers and Vikings. But okay. So we round things out there. I want to go to the wide receivers. And Mike, you and I both like this one. DeAndre Hopkins in his new digs in Arizona, speaking of digs, Cliff Kingsbury, that pad, the bachelor pad, made a lot of wave. But Hopkins, 9 touchdown catches. I liked the under, but you were really strong on the under. Why?
Yeah, no question. This number is way too high. I mean, first of all, let's look at Hopkins. He himself, as a superstar NFL wide receiver who has missed a grand total of 2 games in his 7 NFL seasons, right? So it's not like this is a product of missed action during a few seasons. He's been out there. He's been under 7 touchdowns in 4 of the 7 seasons. So that's A. B is, this is a really high bar to get to. Only 6 wide receivers reached 9 touchdowns, and only 2 went over this mark and got to 10 last season. Now, some years it's going to be a little bit above that, but usually it's in the 6 to 7 wide receiver range. So, look, does Hopkins have it in him in this improved Cardinals offense? It's possible, obviously, but I think it's a long shot for him to go over 9. Also, one other kind of side note here. Last year, Cliff Kingsbury's offense saw 53% of their touchdowns scored through the air. That was the 4th lowest mark in the NFL. They preferred to run the ball as the goal line drew near. Maybe that goes up a little bit this season, but obviously it's a variable we can consider. So my projection is 7.8. So that's well below this number. I like this one a lot.
Interesting. I like it too. And I guess it comes down to, Preston, kind of for me, to oversimplify things, if you believe like when they're going to have a nice trio of receivers in Arizona. So if you think like, oh, well, he was double teamed a bunch in Arizona, now he's going to be more wide open. I don't think you can just do that in the NFL and just like you couldn't, like maybe high school, just leave guys wide open. Like, he was the main kind of focal point of Deshaun Watson, whereas with all these other kind of good receivers, not his level, but with, you know, Fitzgerald, and there's going to be just more options around the goal line. So I think he's going to be a huge, like, addition to the team, but I don't know if his number's going to skyrocket up either. Where do you stand with Hopkins?
I think – so, I mean, Mike's clearly anti-air raid here. I mean, he likes the Murray under for passing yards. He likes the Hopkins under. I agree more with the Hopkins under than I would Murray's passing yards. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, they love to throw the ball. And then they just traded David Johnson for Hopkins. They're going to be throwing more often. And one thing to consider, I think, as they do near that goal line, the reason that they needed Hopkins, I mean, David Johnson, obviously, he's been hurt pretty often for Arizona. He's hit or miss. They were so bad inside the red zone and the goal line, just scoring the football, period. They kicked so many field goals that were, I remember, like 17 to 25 yard field goal attempts. I just pulled it up. They only scored touchdowns 45% of their red zone trips. It ranked 29th in the NFL. Only Cincinnati and Pittsburgh and Jacksonville were worse. Hopkins is going to make them much more dynamic in the red zone. I just think they will be scoring more touchdowns through the year, just because of his addition. Now, whether or not they spread it out, generally air raid, you are spreading it out. There are other receivers that can get those touches, or Hopkins is, you know, decoy to just opening other things up. I agree. It's hard to just bet on someone to get 10 touchdowns or more though in one season, since receiving touchdowns are, there's some randomness to it, and it could happen, and we're going to get to one that I think was extremely random last year. But Hopkins, I'd have to bet under 9 at that point, but I would pass on Murray, in my personal opinion.
Mike, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just screaming exactly. Yeah, like it just, it's the number, that's double-digit touchdowns. I mean, especially for a wide receiver or tight end, I mean, that is such a high bar to hit. And by the way, I do have Arizona projected to improve in terms of touchdown scoring, but keep in mind they weren't terrible in that department last season, right? They were at rate, I would say just below average, 2.4 per game, just below average. So they were scoring some touchdowns last season. I do expect it to be better, but still, I can't manufacture my projections to get him to 9 or over 9. It's just it's a high bar.
Well, and Preston alluded to it, the guys who did catch 10 touchdowns last year are not exactly household names. So the production not always correlated directly to skill set. And one of those is Kenny Golladay, Preston. That's a play you have for this coming season.
Yes, I really like his under at 9.5. Now, you look at his numbers in 2018. So I'll just go last year. Let me start over. Last year, I was so bullish on Golladay in season-long drafts. And I picked him just about everyone I could, and it paid off. Because you look at his 2018 numbers, right? He had 119 targets, 70 catches, over 1,000 yards. But he only had 5 touchdowns. He actually led the NFL in 2018 in touchdowns taken away by offensive penalty. I think there were 4 of them. So he projected out to be more like an 8 or 9 touchdown guy that season. Then this last year, you know, you expect regression in some regard, and that's what we got. He actually had fewer targets, fewer receptions. He only caught 65 balls, yet he had 11 touchdowns. He caught 11 touchdown balls despite only 65 receptions. That's the other side of the extreme, right? So you kind of combine these two where he's had this really underachieving season from the touchdown department. Last year, he overachieved in that regard, and you kind of regress it all out. And I expect him to be an 8 touchdown guy this upcoming season. I believe Mike's projection was right at 8 as well. This is 9.5. This is another one. Is he going to get to 10 plus double digits? I actually think Hopkins, if I had to say who has a better chance of getting to 10, I think it would actually be Hopkins, in my opinion, than it would be the Detroit Lions and Kenny Golladay again. So for me, I love the under 9.5 TDs for him.
That is interesting, given where it's projected and where it's lined. But, you know, he had, and that was a great point about the most touchdown taken away. That just kind of lends itself to the king of the backdoor cover in Matthew Stafford and sort of the nature and game script of what Lions games figured to be, although they're not the laughing stock they once were. But competitive division, going to be throwing a lot, particularly in the second half, you would assume. I'm going to go to a team that's not going to be throwing a lot, at least in my eyes, and that's Stephon Diggs. I like his under prop at 950 receiving yards, give or take a half yard. I just don't think this team wants to throw the ball and air it out. And if they do, Josh Allen's not exactly the most accurate passer. There's only been 2 seasons Diggs has gone over this number, and that's with the last 2 years with Kirk Cousins. I think Cousins obviously is a punchline in a lot of ways, but he is a good quarterback in terms of accurate and throwing the ball. I just think this team wants to lean on their defense. They want to lean on Josh Allen, maybe dual threat kind of an approach, and just the running game in general. So I'm on the under 950 for Diggs in his first year with the Bills, and obviously the risk of injury too. And when the weather gets a certain way out there, I just don't see him approaching 1,000 yards. Mike, did you project? Do you have that in front of you with Diggs at all?
I do, actually. The line's 949.5. My projection right now, 952.4.
Okay.
It's one of the closest on the board for me, actually the third closest. So it's kind of a pass situation. But generally, if I'm looking at a projection this close and I have to pick a side, I'm going to go under for sure. I mean, you know, these tend to hit the unders more, a lot more than the over. So I totally understand what you're saying, but I do expect him to immediately slide in as their number one. And by the way, the Bills have been incredibly healthy the past 2 seasons, especially on the defensive side of the ball. If they start to crack a little bit this season, which history suggests they probably will, that could mean more competitive games, more throwing in the second half. That could help Diggs. And that's why my projection comes in pretty close, despite the concerns you laid out.
All right, one other receiver to wrap things up with you, Mike, and that's the other guy who had 10 touchdown catches last year, and that's Cooper Kupp. And you're going to be doing something similar to what Preston did.
Oh yeah. Love touchdown regression in the mean. It's so strong. It's one of the more reliable things in a game, or, you know, that's obviously very unreliable. But the line here, 7.5 receiving touchdowns for Kupp. And look, he's been a machine in this department. 16 touchdowns over his past 24 games. But if you look at his opportunity adjusted touchdown total, which is expected touchdown total based on how he's been utilized, it comes in at 8.2 during that span. That's almost half of his actual output. So he doesn't get the ball near the goal line as much as you probably think. 48th in end zone targets last season, only has 15 of them in his career. And you also have to consider the fact that, yes, I know Brandon Cooks is gone, but, you know, Kupp's snap share dropped, his routes dropped, his target share plummeted from 25% to 15% in the final month last season when they were going heavier on two tight end sets. They plan on instituting that for the full season this year. So, you know, I still think his target share will be higher than 15%. Don't get me wrong. But when you combine that dip with the fact that he doesn't get enough work near the goal line, you know, a number closer to 5.5 to 6 touchdowns is where he belongs.
Yeah, it is interesting when these guys, because he does, some guys just find the way, right? And Cooper Kupp could be one of those guys, but can't fault you at all for taking the under. Let's go to the running backs now. And Preston mentioned Teddy Bridgewater on the over and just sort of how he expects Panthers games to unfold and the poor defense as well. But you're going to go under with Christian McCaffrey, who's, you know, an MVP candidate. Why is that?
Yeah, I actually like the under on the rushing yards, which is at 1249.5. I come in at 1050, and then rushing touchdowns, he's at 9.5. I'm at 8.6. So I'm actually going to lean toward the under pretty aggressively on both of these. And there's a couple things in play here. First of all, if you look back to from 2009 to 2017, 80 running backs with 200 plus carries in back-to-back seasons and then went on to appear in at least one game the next season, 50 of them reached 200 carries. Again, 12 more reached 150. So, you know, it's just a tough, it's tough in the NFL to sustain that sort of high end, and usage and production and avoid injuries, which he has done so far. And then kind of to apply it to touchdowns, he was over his head. He had 15 last season, but he had a 10.8 OTD. And, you know, that was while ranking fourth with 287 carries. The new coach, Matt Rhule, already said he's going to use him less this season. And look, and we also have some historical context here. From 07 to 18, 14 running backs and 15-plus rushing touchdowns. That group averaged 6.1 next season. That's a crazy drop. Wow. Only five of the got to 10 touchdowns. So, again, I think these projections assume, okay, maybe, you know, we don't expect him to play the full season, you know, take away some, you know, add in some injury, maybe a little bit less efficiency, fine. But does it factor in the fact that he's probably going to be used less? He's not going to be a 95% sort of snap guy. I don't think so. So that's why I come up quite a bit short on both of these.
Preston, how do you feel about these under projections, rushing and touchdowns for McCaffrey in an offense you think will take out? You like Bridgewater over.
Sure. And, you know, a lot of that's just going to be the fact. I mean, like LSU last year, they had Clyde Edwards-Helaire was great. They threw the ball a lot more than they ran. I mean, you can say that they were balanced with a lot of RPO, and it's a lot of reading the defense, which I obviously trust Bridgewater will be able to do. And they just have so many playmakers that he can get the ball to. He's so accurate. I do agree. I think, for one, you just can't rely on a running back to have 95% of the snaps. It's just not realistic for them to stay healthy. So first and foremost, that's definitely going to be the case. But second is they probably just are going to run, I think, less frequently. So for me in general, I have my numbers here. I'll pull them up. For McCaffrey, they were both passes for me, and because I'm probably being a little more cautious because I am bullish on the Panthers offense. But I have touchdowns right spot on, but I would bet under yards. I have that closer to 1100.
The under rushing looks very enticing given his performance out of the backfield as a receiving running back. I mean, that just to isolate rushing yards, that feels really high.
Yep, absolutely agree.
Yeah. No, I know Mike agrees. Go ahead.
Yeah. I like the yardage more than the touchdowns for sure. I my gap, my projection is 1050, so I'm about 200 yards lower on the rushing yard. So that, I agree that one is the much more enticing bet.
Any running back props for you, Preston, that stand out? There's not as many offered at Caesars that we've looked at or even elsewhere in the market, of course. You have the Derrick Henry compelling player, or at least well-known player, 1,200 rushing yards for him. He's coming back. I mean, he has such a strong December and even into January. I could see kind of there being an overreaction with the betting market with Derrick Henry. Ezekiel Elliott, it's always kind of, he's a little bit under the radar. 10 touchdowns rushing, so no receiving. It has to be 10 rushing touchdowns for Zeke. lot of hype with this Cowboys offense, especially that they got CeeDee Lamb, who you know, obviously dropped in the draft. That feels like a high number, but then again, this Cowboys offense, it should be pretty prolific, all things considered. Alvin Kamara rushing touchdowns, 7.5, so he's been a dual threat guy, but rushing. Anything stand out to you?
So there was one that was intriguing. I didn't even send it to you because I haven't bet any of the running back ones. There wasn't enough that stood out. But Derrick Henry, you mentioned him. If there was a way to get Caesars to post first half of the season Derrick Henry versus back half of the season Derrick Henry, we could just hammer under for his first half projection, which, you know, the line would be about half of what it is. And then the back half, like, he just seems to get better as the season progresses in a way, in a level that just we've never seen before. Like, if you took Adrian Peterson prime and then, like, upped it another notch, that's Derrick Henry at the end of these seasons where teams are just more worn down and he's just bulldozing through them. Their team's getting more, obviously, like, the chemistry with Tannehill taking over, and they were just getting better and better. I actually, now this is like the square one, I think, of, you know, all these props potentially. I like Derrick Henry over. If he's healthy, like, he's going to get to 1,200 plus yards, in my opinion. Like, there's just not even a doubt. If there were a way to in-game bet the season-long prop, again, wait the first month or two out, then bet the over, just the way he's run the last few seasons. But, yeah, Henry's a really intriguing name just because, you know, running backs, you generally want to be betting, at, you know, like he mentioned, regression for receiving touchdowns, and running backs can have regression too. Henry just doesn't seem like the guy in my head that's going to be regressing. And I have him projected higher, more in the 1,300 range rather than 1,200. So there is a slight edge there, in my opinion, anyway.
Mike, where do you stand with Derrick Henry?
I agree. Again, I feel kind of gross taking overs on running backs, but I'm over 1,300 rushing yards on Henry, and that's with his workload scaled back pretty good from last season, you know, assuming the possibility of him missing a couple of games with an injury and a little bit of an efficiency dip. But, you know, look, the guy is going to be the clear workhorse. Even Deion Lewis is gone, right? Like, I mean, he's the clear guy from week one on in this backfield. And he's been elite in terms of yards after contact, best in the NFL since he joined the league. So he's still in his prime. I think he can get over that 1,200 mark. So I like that. And by the way, I'll throw you one more here. I like the overs on Joe Mixon as well. Again, I hate going over. It takes a lot to get there. But especially the rushing touchdowns, 5.5 is his rushing touchdown mark. I like that a lot. You know, he's ranked top 9 in carries, rushing yards, OTD. Carries inside the 5 each of the past 2 seasons. He scored 8 touchdowns back in 2018 on the ground, and he only had the 5 last year, but he had an 8.5 OTD. The offense is better around him. The offensive line will be healthier and better this season. I think 5.5 for Mixon is too low. And again, I would take the rushing yardage over as well, which is 1059.5.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bengals obviously will need to be – they weren't just a rookie quarterback away from being competent, but I think they're going to be much more respectful than people realize. By the way, we should mention with Derrick Henry, he was the rushing leader last year, so it's not like we're taking a random guy and asking him to produce a 1,200 yards. It is a guy who last year the total was over 1,500 yards, and to Preston's point, it was the second half of the season. Preston, do you have an opinion on the Bengals or even Mixon?
I don't know. It's okay to just say you don't know. Man, the Bengals were so bad last year. Zach Taylor, like, who really knows? That was his first shot at coaching. I love Joe Burrow. What he did, obviously, at LSU last year deserves all the credit in the world. And, you know, Mixon as a player, and they have all these receiving options now. Like, their offense should conceivably be better. I have to see it, though. I don't think I can really be bullish Cincinnati until we see some changes from last year's team, at least. And we may see them right away. And they may be a team that, just from a betting perspective, week to week early on, is undervalued. And so it's something to keep an eye on early.
Yeah. And I think they will be. I think they're going to be undervalued, guys. Because, you know, last year I was really hard for not addressing their defense, right? They just did a terrible job improving what was already a bad unit. That wasn't the case this offseason. They revamped the whole secondary, Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Von Bell. You know, they get DJ Reader, who's a star defensive tackle. I just think they did a really nice job adding key pieces on that side of the ball just to make them competent, right? A competent defense, at least average, as opposed to just completely awful. So I think that's a factor, too, for Mixon. You know, if the pressure is not on Joe Burrow to throw the ball a ton in the fourth quarter, that's going to be more opportunity for Joe Mixon. And again, they did try to run the ball last year. I think that'll be the case again this season.
I do think it's going to be a better Bengals team. It's hard to be worse, but
yeah,
there's a lot of issues there, and maybe just wiping the slate clean there could help with a new quarterback, new face. It wasn't Andy Dalton's problems, but they were just so inept, especially that Monday night. There were a lot of bad memories of that team. Anything else, guys, that stands out to you or you found interesting or the number right about, right, you know, just like anything sort of like kind of like a story, a headline that you, your biggest takeaway from these odds?
One. Yeah. I got one. One more receiver prop that I liked for touchdowns was Allen Robinson. And over with the Bears, I like the over 5.5. And you look back, you know, in his sophomore season, he has that massive Jacksonville season. He catches 14 touchdowns. Everyone anticipates regression, which happened, but he still went over 5.5 touchdowns. That next year in Jacksonville, he gets injured the first game of the season. He doesn't play after that. Then the Chicago Bears pick him up. Mitchell Trubisky's first season, he's a rookie. Everyone's like, okay, you know, it's going to take some time. Robinson only caught 4 TDs. He was the guy I was buying, you know, along with Galladay preseason last year for fantasy for season-long drafts. And he was okay. He had 7 TDs, but he actually projected out when he caught 98 balls on 154 targets to have even more touchdowns than 7. I think it projected to be like an 8.3 TD season for Robinson. So he's a little bit unlucky. And so now looking at this year, it's like, okay, well, Trubisky's maybe not even in the picture anymore. Do we trust Nick Foles? I think you can at least say, yes, we trust Nick Foles. He has the connection with Nagy and in the past and in at least more than Trubisky. And they just showed last year when they went to him 154 times that they're going to try to get Allen Robinson football when they can. They know he's a playmaker. He's the guy they have to trust, you know, in the red zone or around the goal line through the air. 5.5 is just too low. I think 7's about a fair number, and we're getting 5.5. And he's this guy who went from superstar, second season in the league, 14 TDs in Jacksonville, to just kind of flying under the radar now. So I like Allen Robinson. I like the over at 5.5.
Interesting. You're going to expect things from the Bears offense. I mean, it was so inept at times. By the way, I heard you could bet week one starter Trubisky, like -05 or something like that. I think Trubisky's definitely the starter week one.
It's possible week one. Yeah, no, it certainly is. And if that's the case, then he's 154 targets, 7 TDs, you know, almost 1,200 yards, I believe, for Robinson. I mean, he still went way over this 5.5 anyways. I just think that there's a chance Foles is an upgrade over Trubisky. And Robinson's kind of just, yeah, he's better than the last two seasons have shown, I think, at least that two seasons ago as Trubisky as a rookie.
Well, I do think he's better, but I just think in terms of how you manage the situation, I think you have to start with Trubisky. If you don't, then you already have a bruised ego in the back of it. It's just like, it's kind of, you kind of need to save Foles, kind of that
Didn't
card
that
to pull.
When they traded for Foles, like you already have bruising ego.
Right.
It's a tough spot.
Mike, any other numbers kind of, even if it's a pass, is it an interesting pass? Anything else stand out to you?
Well, how about this one? There's only one passing TD prop on the board right now, which I can probably explain why that is. It's Drew Lock. He comes in at 20. And look, let's look at some historical context here. How about last season? There were 24 passing touchdown props on the board. 18 of those went under. 75% went under. 18 out of 24. And guys, I still like the over on this one. It's close. I mean, I might pass on this one, but I come in at 21.5 for Lock. I mean, they improved the weapons around him. He should be the starter for pretty much the entire season unless he's really, really poor, which is possible. But again, I don't think he will be. They have a competent offensive line. They drafted Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. They have Noah Fant. They have Cortland Sutton. They have three competent running backs out of the backfield. I think this line of 20 is just a pinch too low. But again, a little nervous after what we saw last season in this category.
Well, yeah, and the Denver off. Look, I think the Broncos team could be an 8-8 team, maybe even be a sneaky kind of wild card pick if all things kind of break their way. What I find interesting and Preston, I'm curious because you also handicapped college. Like I faded Drew Lock in like big games when Missouri had to play a Power 5 team, and he kind of racked up the stats against Middle Tennessee State, things like that. But I've been pleasantly surprised by his performance so far. What did he go 4-0 to close the year as a starter, maybe 4-1 with the Broncos? So what do you make of Locke? And, you know, obviously there's going to be more film out there for this coming season.
That's interesting. So there's something at least sort of to what happened in college, right? Like, as you mentioned it, Missouri is just not as good as most of the SEC. So when they'd go up against them, yeah, it would be tougher. And I don't think you can put that entirely on Drew Lock. Then when they played Middle Tennessee or like UConn, I remember there's another one where they were only laying like 14 against UConn at home. And You know, they won by, it was like a 49-7 game or something. They would crush on teams. They played Idaho and won by like 50. So there was this dynamic of, we're not as good as the rest of the SEC, which is by far the best conference in the entire country. But we're a lot better than everyone else that's, you know, a small school. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Luck can't hang in the NFL, because you mentioned it. We saw him, you know, finish 4-0 or whatever it was down the stretch. And I don't think you can put enough stock into, he wasn't good against good competition in college, just because there's so much more that goes on outside of a quarterback for that to be the case. So I think it's an interesting one. I think it's also interesting. Maybe it's because it's kind of the local-ish team outside of the Raiders will be in Vegas. There's a lot of Denver Broncos fans around here. It's like Niners, Broncos, and then the Raiders will be. But it's weird that that's the only one that they posted, just because it's, you know, this young kid that takes over, and, you know, he's, I don't know if everyone really trusts in him or believes in him yet. But it's also like, can he throw for 1.4 TDs a game if he plays, you know, most of the year? He should. So I'm intrigued. I'll probably pass, but I'm trying to be a Drew Lock supporter. I don't want to just throw him under the bus because Missouri got beat by, you know, Bama's, LSU's, Auburn's.
Huh. Interesting. That's Mike. That's a good catch, by the way. Only one passing touchdown prop on the board, because you're right. It's all these yards for quarterbacks, and then obviously Lamar Jackson's rushing yards is interesting. Mahomes' passing yards, that's no surprise, pretty high, 45-50, but I would lean over with Mahomes. Well, let's wrap it up with any kind of take on Mahomes. 4,549.5. Mike, I'll go with you.
I'm just under on this one. I'm at 44-36. So this one's too close for me. I'm going to pass on it. But I think that there's a little bit of post-hype appeal here, right? Because his numbers did, as we all expected, regress to the mean in a big way last season. You could say some of that was injury-related, but, you know, the injuries was only an excuse the weeks that his numbers were down, right? He still had some huge weeks, and then suddenly he was fine, and it was the roller coaster all season long. So I think he came back to earth a little bit, but he still was an outstanding MVP-caliber player. He'll be right in the running for that again, but it's still a very good football team. He's not going to have a massive amount on his shoulders, you know, late in game. So, again, I would lean toward the under here, but I'm a little more comfortable passing on it.
All right, cool. Preston, what about you as we say goodbye here?
I have nothing on Mahomes, man. It's one of those, like you mentioned it with Lamar Jackson and the under rushing, where it's like you don't want to get caught betting against someone that's just more dynamic than everyone else historically. And Mahomes may just have that. I mean, if he plays a healthy season and he's playing 15, 16 games, he absolutely could go over his totals, and you know, if he doesn't, then that's fine too. I think this is ultimately a guy that you hate to call him just injury bets, but I think there's some guys that their lines are low if they're healthy, and they're too high if they miss games, and it just comes down to that. Which I'm ultimately not going to be betting if I don't see an edge, you know, any other way or other in other spots. So it's passes for me on Mahomes. He's got to respect that the kid's one of the best, maybe of all time already.
Yeah, no, I think it's totally fair. And Mike, you and I kind of laughed a couple years ago when he was first, you know, in his his MVP campaign, when he burst on the scene, and you're like, well, we've never seen numbers like this. It was like week three or so, week two, and you're like, it's got to regress. And I'm just like, no, it doesn't have to do anything. He could be because it was Andy Reid, it was all the speed. I mean, it was everything. It was just sort of a perfect storm, and we had seen sort of the trend of the NFL. But look, I thank you guys for doing this, Mike. I know you're really busy with your NASCAR simulator. So appreciate you taking the time to join me. You got a little plug at all for the esports here?
Yeah, iRacing. I was racing against some NASCAR drivers the other night. I actually took out Kevin Harvick, and then Kyle Busch crashed me under caution. I don't know if it was intentional or not. We haven't figured that out. But it's a lot of fun.
I have a similar story. I did actual racing against Kyle Busch. It was in Vegas at the little, what are those go-kart, Preston, what's the name of those places you can go and drive those carts indoors? They're really popular. There's a bunch of them throughout Vegas.
There's like the speedways?
No, it's the little go-kart kind of things. So you drive around. It's like kids' birthday parties and stuff. I feel bad because I know the guy who runs the place, but anyways, it was like a charity event. So it was actually the ribbon cutting event. So we went and covered it, and I got to race with some other media members. And I guess I like did something to Kyle Busch, and he like ended up like, you know, turning me, and I spun around. He like did something, and like I like jammed my wrist on like the wheel and like the impact of the car. So these guys are no joke. So I applaud you, Mike Clay, for being such a stud there and rolling, but you have a simulator at home. So, you're authentic. You grew up behind with this stuff. And then you became an NFL guru.
Yes, that's the hobby on the side, right? Football is life these days, but that's the hobby on the side. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Can't recommend iRacing enough, especially right now, because, right, we have kind of that void in our lives. That's a good way to get some competition.
Yeah. Preston, any parting shots for the people?
No, we'll be back. We'll try to do more of these for college football whenever we get some props potentially for that or get some certainty that we have a college football season. We'll do a pod for some college football futures.
Yeah, no, we're going to do a lot of that in the coming, weeks. Hopefully we'll have sports coming. Obviously soccer's coming. We have UFC this weekend. We have, by the way, I'm fading Dominic Cruz for anyone still focused on that. And, we'll get sports back. We'll get Daily Wager on the air. We'll talk more about NFL numbers. And by the way, it's Pole Position Raceway is the name of the place. Gotcha. So I apologize
shout
for those.
Out to your friends.
Yeah, guys who are yelling at the screen, like, come on, as they're listening, people, some Vegas residents. But guys, no, I really appreciate you guys doing this. It was fun. And like you said, thanks to all the guys, everyone listening, and hopefully we're adding a little bit of entertainment. And my friends, by the way, Brad and Mark. So thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to you guys, and we'll catch you back here soon as well.
Kicking is for losers.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Christina mentioned it. Everyone's been talking about it, but I want to just remind everyone our coverage of The Last Dance is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Coverage is also brought to you by AT&T. Now, Christina, you're a lot younger than I am. How much of the Bulls do you remember, that peak Bulls?
To be honest, I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah, that's why I asked you.
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 1995.
Okay.
So I was way
really
too young to really, be able to watch and understand what was happening. I grew up watching old games. I grew up watching games with my dad. But, for me, it's really interesting to see a lot of the stuff that I didn't grow up with. I wasn't old enough to know what was going on. So for me, this is all basically new information.
Well, it's funny. I saw, this came about when Kobe passed, saying like a lot of current players are so young that like Kobe is their Jordan. They weren't even alive for Jordan, which, it's crazy when you think about it because, he was playing in the 2000s, albeit with the Wizards. It's not like we're talking about Magic. But for me, I've loved it. I knew most of the stuff, like the Scottie Pippen contract stuff got buzzed. I actually knew that just because I'm an NBA junkie and stuff. But the last week was just so awesome. The episodes 5 and 6 were just off the charts. The Dream Team stuff. The Isaiah Thomas stuff, the gambling stuff was fantastic. And we're going to get more of it as Jordan's about to step away. So I'm glad you've appreciated it. I hope a lot of our listeners are. The old school people are enjoying it as well. We forget. It's just fast. Imagine if like LeBron 5, 6 years ago just left to go play baseball for 2 years. I mean, it's just like somebody at the peak leaves. It's fascinating. I mean, to borrow a line from Ryan Russillo, my colleague, like First Take would have to add an hour if that happened with LeBron. Like if LeBron did something like that, First Take would have to add an hour. So, good stuff as always. So check that out on Sunday nights. And we'll be doing pods the rest of the way. We'll create fresh content and obviously Daily Wager content as well. So Christina, you continue to stay safe. Everyone listening, you continue as well. And, just keep tabs on all of us, whether it be Twitter or whatever. We'll have a lot of developments in the coming weeks.